the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from the Are You Serious Network covering the LSU Tigers, Blake Ruffino. Blake, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, Mike.
This is, I was talking to Charlie about this off the air. My thing is on the edges along the offensive line. You know, you kind of know what you got there. I think you saw a little bit of it in the bowl, in the Texas Bowl game against Baylor, where I thought Baylor tried to do a lot of different things to kind of confuse that front, and didn't quite work. And I thought Tyree Adams and Weston Davis did a good job. My concern is really right up the middle because of the fact, you know, if they healthy, Moore's going to start at center. Okay, that's a given. DJ is going to go back to the guard position where he belongs, and Mbenga, and we'll see if that works out at the guard position. But looking at it, other than Bordelon, tell me anybody else has got any kind of playing time along that offensive line. We know about injuries, and about that position takes a lot of them. So you have six guys. Who would be the seventh and eighth? And is it an 18-year-old freshman or redshirt freshman that's going to come in here to play?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's Carius Kern. You know, look, we've been out there for 2 days, and I just got to tell you, even right now, look, again, Mike, you've been out there a lot, so you understand what I'm trying to say here. The interior has not been great first 2 days. And they have Carius Kern at left tackle. Mike, I got to be real. I'm moving him inside now, and I'm giving him a look. I understand Mbenga. I understand Chester, which, by the way, Mike, just a side note, I think looks a lot better at guard than at any point at center a year ago. But I'm giving Carius Kern a run here. I just think the strength, I understand the experience. But, Mike, if you got tools and you can play and you're more talented the guy ahead of you, he's got to get a look. Now, what does Josh Thompson do? You know, what happens on Saturday when we go and get those pads on and they're out here hitting? I don't know. But to your overall point, I think it's a great question that we had a lot of debate about last night. God bless the Almighty if somebody goes down. Because, Mike, let me read off what happened in team period with the second unit. Gooden sack, Patrick Payton sack, Patrick Payton sack, Gabe Rutherford sack. They ran four plays.
Damn.
So, Patrick Payton probably shouldn't be going up against the second team, right? I don't think that that's going to happen. But Michael Van Buren had no time. And I think that is to a point where I'm with you. I don't know about the depth or quality of depth that's experienced enough to get ready to go. They got to find somebody, and they got to find somebody now. So I'm sorry for not really answering your question, but Mike, they got to get Carius Kern moving, and they got to get him moving quick.
Well, you know, Blake, now that you mentioned that, I was like thinking, okay, very similar to the Saints, are we winning or losing in the trenches? It could be offense and defensive line. You know how you slow down the pass rush when you run right at them? Because a lot of times, right, outstanding pass rushers, they want to, like, rush the passer, then on the way to the quarterback, play the run. But at the point of attack, if you can go right at him. But so the question I have for you, and this really applies, I guess, to both sides of the ball. I'm looking at an offense last year, LSU ranked last in the SEC in rushing, 116 mm-hmm. yards per game. And it was even ineffective in short yardage situations. That puts a lot of pressure on Nussmeier. And then they had the experienced offensive line. So at times you could say, well, maybe they abandoned the run too quickly. And then the defensive side of the ball wasn't much better, where they were 12th in the league, giving up 140 yards rushing allowed per game. So and then, you know, obviously containing mobile quarterbacks. We played Alabama. We put them in the Hall of Fame. But now, you know, Jalen Mirrell. So when I look at all that, you know, it's all fine and dandy. You have all these skilled people and all that. But something as simple as, like, are you winning and losing in the trenches? I don't care if you're trying to stop the run or run the ball. That, to me, more than anything, that's a concern. And it's going to start with Clemson. You can't get discouraged. I think we can upset Clemson. But looking at that, that's totally unacceptable that you last in the SEC rushing the football when you 12th in the SEC stopping the run. That can't happen going forward.
Yeah, you know, Bobby, the thing that I brought up to your point, remember 2023 when the secondary was as god-awful as it was, there was a lot in the offseason made of that, and rightfully so, right?
Right.
But then going into this season, what if I told you in 2023 your secondary ranked in the country 108th, and in rushing last year you were 108th from a countrywide perspective? Yeah, it's the same deal. Their inability to run the football, Brian Kelly at the end of the year having to get involved in play calling from a run game standpoint, I don't know how they walked that back. Personally, I just don't. But even, Bobby, the first 2 days. I mean, look, Bernard Gooden got to start today with the first team in reference to the three tackles for a loss in the run game that he had yesterday. I mean, look, I'm not trying to call anybody out, but that interior offensive line got whooped.
Right.
And so, again, you don't have pads on, and I know what I'm saying is, you know, all Blake is day one, I get it. Bernard Gooden's 260 pounds. And I understand what we're saying. They're going to have to find something, Bobby, in my opinion, in that interior. Again, for me, I think you do Kadarius Kern a very big disservice by leaving him at left tackle. But, you know, I don't know what they do there. Again, I guess let's see what happens on Saturday when pads come on. But, Bobby, another thing to your point, today and yesterday, more yesterday than anything, I think there was a massive focus of trying to just get the running back the ball out of the backfield from a pass game standpoint, quick pass, quick throws.
Right.
And the Houston transfer safety, A.J. Halsey, was having none of it. And got to throw him out there. Perkins was having none of it. I mean, they were all over. And so, Bobby, the question that I'm starting to have right now for me with what they've done in the interior of the defensive line at the current moment with Don McKinley, who was pretty disruptive. I know me and Mike have talked about him a lot. That front seven been moving now, baby. I mean, like, they've been – I mean, look, 2022 was probably the best defense Brian Kelly has had here. I just think it's been more competitive up front defensively. The edge has set the tone, and that is the bottom line. They have dominated from day one of spring. They've dominated yesterday. They dominated today. So – I don't know what they're going to figure out along this offensive line, offensively, what they're going to try to do. But they're not, at the current moment, they have not figured that part out. Now, they try to get the balls to the backs out of the backfield. But, again, it hadn't been flowing that way. In Garrett's defense, I'll just say this. There were some throws yesterday that I'm like, goodness gracious, that's better than, you know, right decisions ready to go. So, through 2 days, I wish I could come out here and say it was a lot better, but right now it has not been.
Now, Blake, you know, obviously sometimes you want it to be 50-50. You don't want the offense to dominate or the defense to dominate because you're going against one another. But when you look at defensive coordinator right now with Blake Baker, and you look at Harold Perkins and now Whit Weeks and those chess pieces that he has there – when you look at Perkins, is it kind of like a star hybrid linebacker safety position? How is he being utilized there?
Yeah, Bobby, I mean, he's in that star role, whatever you want to call it. Is it a big safety in the box sort of deal, whatever you want to call it, an over-glorified 4-3?
Right.
Whatever you want to call it. They sent him all day yesterday. I mean, he was coming. He was coming after 13. He made some disruptive plays in the backfield and some run game stuff. He made some disruptive plays getting after Garrett, which Garrett had to dump it off quickly. They send him a lot. And what I think is a little bit interesting about this front seven, based off of what Blake Baker so far during the spring and through the 2 days in camp, they have rotated that front seven more than any unit that I've ever been a part of or watching practice or anything like that. For an example, first down base, they're doing something completely different along the defensive line than they're doing on second down, third down. And even in yesterday's situation, the fourth down, where they're going a three-man front, but they have Patrick Payton on the outside along with Harold Perkins. So just a lot of different things that they've been doing, and Jamari Butler was in the inside. A lot of different things, but from Perkins' perspective, he's been in that star role, coming downhill a lot, trying to just get in the backfield. And then A.J. Halsey, the safety from Houston, also being in the box a lot, and they've been going man-to-man. And they're just trying to get after Garrett as much as they can right now, from what we've seen. But, Bobby, the first unit yesterday, as an example, there were four different defensive line combinations in 25 plays. So, I mean, just based off of personnel and what they called and what they're doing, it depends on who's there. Tyburn's been in there. Relaford, who's had a big camp so far, had a sack again today. It's just been a big deal on how they're rotating them in and out, and it's been a lot of them.
You know, Blake, so you look, they're benefiting. It seems like now you got to play the games, but the transfer portal, they're going to have opportunities. And, you know, a lot of different faces, but it's all about opportunities, keeping guys fresh. So that's definitely encouraging with the defense. And then you even look at the back end, because that's one thing more than anything. You know, fans will come up to me, and I don't know, maybe it's a pride thing, you know, Tiger Stadium, whatever. We should never have a sorry defense. We might not have enough imagination offensively, but I like it when it's like, you know, sustained drive. How about we, you know, getting up on them when they can't make three or four first downs in a row or something? You know, to me, that kind of sets the tone. And it's nice when you score touchdowns and explode, the crowd goes wild. But there's nothing like it when you sack in the quarterback, creating turnovers. That's when I think the crowd really goes mad. And that's when we need to get back defensively, to me, in Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, and just being consistent, right? I mean, look, third down for under Brian Kelly has been pretty abysmal. Now, I got a little bit better last year under Blake Baker. I know they've talked a lot about quote-unquote, getting him the tools. But, Bobby, again, I mean, you're talking about Jacoby and Guillory being your third rotation of that interior defensive tackle room. They've run out Bernard Good. Now, Ahmad Bro has been in there. They've moved Jamari Butler in these pass-down situations, what he did at Nebraska. Look, I think he had, what, five sacks last year? Four came at that three technique, inside, outside that shoulder of the guard. So, again, it's just so many mix and matches. They're running in and out of there. Again, it's only 2 days, right? And I understand that. But if you're doing that in 2 days, what are you trying to accomplish, right? Like, are you just trying to keep guys fresh? That's one thing. But at the current moment, it seems like, look, we feel like we have a lot of people in the interior from a depth perspective that we can give a lot of reps to. And we have a lot of guys on the exterior that can get after it. And we're going to send Perk right after you. Come and get us. We're going to go with Mansoor Delane. And we're going to go with stance, and we're going to go man up, and we're going to make you get the football out and tackle in space. That has been really where they've been trying to attack. And I don't know if, for me, and seeing it, why would you do that through spring? Why would you do that through the first 2 days of camp if that's not something that you're not trying to implement throughout the season?
Yeah, I agree.
We have on with us Blake Ruffino from Are You Serious Network. Blake, two questions for you. One, you know how I feel about Juwan Johnson. My thing is, I did that experiment, and sometimes it works. I saw Corey Webster do it. Yeah, I watched him at St. James. He was a terrific quarterback. They moved him to wide receiver. Then he became a really all-SEC cornerback in the NFL. But I always told you, and I really felt this way, Johnson should be playing on offense somewhere. Now, I don't know if they're going to build a package with him at the quarterback position that maybe, and I want to say similar to Taysom Hill, but you can build those packages around a player that you can use, especially goal line, short yardage situation. The other one, I think you know who probably told me this, Ahmad Bro, and his comment was, Dominic McKinley is dominant in these drills, I've been told. But he said, watch Ahmad Bro. And the first time I met Ahmad, I don't think his second number was a three. He was like 225 pounds. And he tells me, oh, they got me here to play defensive tackle. I took a good look at him. I said, dude, I remember when I weighed 225. That's the way you play defensive tackle here now. He's different today. But your thoughts on the progress of Ahmad Bro and how they'll use Juwan Johnson this year, because they've moved him now from the secondary and now quarterback, whatever hybrid player that he's going to be.
You know, Mike, it's, to attack the Juwan Johnson thing quickly, funny that a quarterback has a contact jersey on if he's a quarterback. That's all I'm saying, because he does. But he took handoffs yesterday, and I don't know if we've been in here long enough to see certain situations at the goal line for him yet. We haven't gotten that far. I would not be surprised at all. Mike, they're handing him off the football yesterday. I mean, he went through quarterback drills. He went through some running back drills. He's been through ball-carrying drills. He was in them today. When quarterbacks were warming up, he was not with the quarterbacks. He was with the running backs in secure in ball security. So I think that that, for what their vision may be for him, tells you all you need to know. He was the only quarterback, quote-unquote, yesterday that went that defenders were able to hit. Now, Mike, I'm just going to tell you now, he ain't sitting in that pocket long. So I would just say that I want to see a little bit more, you know, right before we get there. I think they're going to utilize him. What they do, how they do it, I don't know yet. In reference to Ahmad Bro, now wearing 16 instead of 93, Mike, he was talking about last offseason having to go to Whataburger three times a day. I look at Whataburger and Game Burger. You know, like, what are we talking about? Mikey's looked good. I mean, again, some of the disruption on third down, when we were talking about the different defensive lines just a second ago, Mikey's coming in on third down. They're using 2-3 techniques and those edge guys, and he's coming off. Again, I think more of the bigger guys, like some of the freshmen that have kind of rotated in here, like Zion in the interior on first down, Sadir Mitchell being there on first down. Then in certain situations, bringing in like guys like Ahmad Bro and then Bernard Gooden on these pass down situations. Again, for any situation, the current way that I feel is what they've been doing, hey, we got two guys that we feel like are the best pass rushers in the interior. If it's third and six, third and seven, or plus, we're going to get them out there. They're, again, Mike, they're rotating them out there like a baker with some rolls in here now. They're rotating them out of there. So he's looked really good. He looks a lot stronger, Mike, if I'm being real. Just a lot built a lot better and looks a lot stronger. And he's been in that rotation of defensive tackles. But, Mike, don't be surprised. You're going to hear about him on third down a lot because that's where they've been putting him so far.
Yeah, he can rush the quarterback really well. Blake, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate time and insights. And, man, I know it's just day two, but so much excitement for LSU football and game one.
Well, and Blake and Mike, when you think of game one, is the playoffs before the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever looked forward to, like, Ohio State, Texas, LSU, Clemson. It doesn't get any better than that.
People are trying to build up this Alabama, Florida State. Alabama's going to wipe the floor with Florida.
No, I look at LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, Texas. It doesn't get any better than that.
I agree with you. Blake, thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Thank y'all for having me.
All righty. We'll be back with more sports talk here in Bobby's Notebook right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're going back to Bobby's Notebook, which is brought to you by Rouse's Markets, celebrating 65 years, and we're just getting started. Bob, one of the questions I want to ask you is about red zone play, because that is so important in the NFL, and that's all about practice. And
right.
The second part of that is making sure your best playmakers touch the ball in the red zone. So we know it's about Kamara. And it's going to be about Chris Olave. Those guys in the red zone. Tell us about how the red zone has broken down for you.
Well, you got to count Rashid too, Mike, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Rashid. But, you know, it's like, I don't know, you want it really to be 50-50. Because you don't want your red zone defense to suck.
No.
I mean, you know, it's like, oh, can we bend but don't break? Then you force in field goals instead of giving up touchdowns. And obviously when you get down there, we got to put it in the end zone. We can't settle for field goals. So, yeah, that's why it's a give and take. And it was like, I think that offense got a little better on the back end compared to the beginning of the red zone. But a number of defensive players making plays. There was a rollout with Rattler, and nobody was open. He took off and was going to run. Not so fast. Nathan Shepard, that would have been 0 yards. Then you had Cam Jordan on coverage. You had Alante Taylor coming on a blitz. Brian Brzee pass defended. So all the players you need to contribute was getting it done. I've been watching Kelvin Banks Jr., Mike, the finesse part of it, good pass protection.
Yeah.
He definitely...
That's encouraging.
Yeah, he looks the part. I don't know if I'd be no run mauler, but as far as, you know, I'd be surprised if he doesn't excel from the get-go as a pass protector. Okay, with that being said, you want to be able to do everything. You want run block or pass block. Now, when you look at the continuation of the red zone, this one Chris Rump stood up against Kendre Miller, who Kendre Miller has to catch the coach's attention in preseason games. It was a tackle fall loss. A good play for Chris Rump, the fifth-year guy out of Duke. And, Mike, what's interesting, and Steve Gell and I, we were just talking about that. You look at a guy like Chris Rump. He's drafted in the fourth round. And this is going in his fifth year, but guess why he's here? He was drafted by the Chargers. Who was coaching the Chargers? Coach Staley. Yep. So, Mike, if he continues to make plays, the trust factor, I mean, he ended up having a tackle for a loss and two sacks. Now, who is he going against? You know, and it'd be interesting to see what happens in the preseason with him. Now, with Tyler Shuck, I had mentioned earlier when the interception, that he had, the batted ball when Stutzman passed defending Nephi Sewell, ended up getting it. But at least he's being more aggressive, not just holding the ball and trying to make plays. I think he kind of stumbled. Jeff and we were standing by each other. Look, he stumbled. I don't know if he got, the turf snake, whatever, got his cleats. But he was kind of falling back, stumbling. And he threw it, didn't really have much of the ball. Jordan Howland came up with an interception on the back of the end zone. You never want to throw a red zone pick. That is like, man, so close, but so far. So that was a Shuck's second interception of the day, and that was by Jordan Howland. Now, and we continue, though. He didn't pout. He continued the fight. Shuck to Kevin Austin Jr. This might have been his the best throw. Nice throw, a plus 16-yard gain. You know, you put the ball to 20, so then you're in scoring range, and he hit Kevin Austin Jr., nice throw for 16 yards. Then all of a sudden, but then it's up and down, then he gets sacked by Jasheen Davis. And then, that's never good. I think that was the tackle from Eastern Kentucky. Ezram, I don't know about him.
Yeah.
He's
but regular then, getting beat.
But then Mikey, but then he bounces back. Shuck to Mason Tipton, 13-yard touchdown. Beat, again, a guy the Saints are counting on defensively, Quincy Raleigh, kind of on a skinny post. Quincy Raleigh, he made plays in the ball, got a couple of interceptions so far in camp. But Mason Tipton got the best of him. I'm just telling you, if Quincy Raleigh's playing, teams are picking on him. They always pick on the rookie. Now, the last red zone pair, looking at Rattler in there, he beats Rashia. He throws it to a touchdown, 15-yard touchdown. Boy, this is what I like about this play, because a lot of things were happening. Nice pressure by Chase Young, but Rattler hung in there, hit Rashid for a 15-yard touchdown, beat Alante Taylor. Not so good for the defense because we need Alante Taylor to, he's not going to be 100%, but Rashid caught a 15-yard touchdown, Alante Taylor, nice pass by Rattler, even though a lot of pressure by Chase Young. So that's a lot of household names right there that occurred and ended up getting an offensive touchdown. So I want to slam dunk the defense won, but they won the majority of time. And that was really the last red zone period before we got into situational football with 2 minutes, with like a minute and 40 left, losing by 4 and 1 timeout. And as the show goes on, we'll break down the back end of that. But that was kind of the red zone. It was kind of give and take, the offense and the defense. But again, overall, the one thing I could say, at least Shuck didn't play scared today. He threw a couple of picks, but he was being more aggressive. And the first pass he threw downfield, you know, he got an interference call in his favor. But you got to spin it. You got to be like, I'm not saying so reckless that I'm just throwing it to be thrown it. But you can't be timid. If you're timid, then you'll never make plays.
Hey, you being a rookie, that's exactly right. What you described is what rookie quarterbacks go through. Here's the crazy part about Chris Rumpf, and you brought it up. He's a little bit of a hybrid player because he's not a big defensive end. He's really built more like a stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker.
And Mike, I love this text right here because I can remember this today. This still gives me nightmares. Bobby knows all about red zone picks. Saints versus Falcons, 1991 playoffs. We move down the field, and then all of a sudden I'm throwing to Wesley Carroll, and he's cutting across. Mike, to this day, I would make the same throw, and you know how you got to run flat and don't give ground? Well, guess who was guarding him? I said, I can burn Deion. I'm going to burn Deion. Deion tugged at his jersey. I go, what? He intercepted it. I thought I had a touchdown. How did he do that? And he got away with that? Those are the kind of plays, like, Mike, I thought, man, I was feeling sharp. I'm right on. I got a damn touchdown. No, you don't. Deion just picked you off.
He was one of one in this world. One of one.
I'm like, this is unbelievable. So that's why red zone, though, I know all about throwing red zone picks or red zone touchdowns. Believe you me, I never forget when I came back in 1991, and the fans are going to cheer me and they're going to boo me. When I hit Floyd Turner, the back of the end zone, to beat the Seattle Seahawks, the very first game. I remember just saying, oh, thank you, Jesus. Thank you for helping me in that divine intervention. I needed that touchdown so bad to win that game. So the red zone is that important. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know, but I know how important it is.
We'll be back with our triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks. The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWF. It's our triple option feature. Myself along with Steve Geller, the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. I'll do this real quick. Bobby brought up Chris Rumpf II and his playmaking skills. And again, I think he's a little bit of a hybrid player. You can see why I think he would fit better in a 3-4 defense as a stand-up guy. But, man, I go back. I scouted his dad.
Whoa.
Was a linebacker at South Carolina. Now, he bounced around the NFL, never really made it anywhere, but guess where he's coaching today?
His dad, is that Mike?
His dad, and we'll see him August 30th.
With Clemson?
He's the defensive line coach for Clemson.
Wow. Well, you know, what goes around comes around. It's about a small world and how everything connects. Mike, that's crazy.
And he's got two potential first-round pick defensive linemen that he's grooming in. But you talk about a guy who goes to South Carolina, but now he's the defensive line coach for Clemson.
Well, yeah, the whole Carolinas, you know, he probably stayed in that region. You know, Carolina Panthers, that's South Carolina's team, even though it's in Charlotte. You look North Carolina, South Carolina, Duke. Clemson, that's all that same area. So, Mike, that stands to reason. Boy, look at that connection when you connect the dots. That's pretty unique.
Steve?
Guys, I'm going to talk about NOLA Gold Rugby. The future of rugby in New Orleans is in big trouble. NOLA Gold informed the Major League Rugby League that they're not going to field the team in 2026. On their website right now, you can go to it. It says, NOLA Gold has informed the league we do not intend to participate in the 2026 season. Discussions are ongoing with the league regarding future opportunities and potential pathways forward. They're an original member of Major League Rugby. Local attorney Tim Falcon led the city's entry.
Falcone.
Yep. Led this league 2018 as one of seven teams. They finally reached the postseason for the first time in 2024. Lost in the opening round to Chicago. Then this past season, they finished 4-12, which was fifth in the Eastern Conference standings. The Gold withdrawal from this season leaves Major League Rugby now with 9 teams. Also today, guys, the San Diego Legion and the Football Club from Los Angeles announced that they're merging for next season as the California Legion.
Well, I think right by the Saints facility, look, we got rid of our Triple-A baseball team, right? To let them take over the field. And it was a nice venue. I've been to a number of games for the NOLA Gold. I don't know. I thought we'd embrace that more. Now, sometimes you want to embrace something, but if you don't know the rules, you know, like, what the hell? You can understand they tackling and it's tough and all that. But, you know.
What can they do with the Shrine this year now?
Yeah, because we have no baseball.
Nothing.
The high school football, they have those deals where That's they have true. Big games like Rummel. Curse et al. Playing out there. So hey, it can still be utilized. You got to use some imagination to utilize it. But
bring baseball back.
Yeah, then I don't know. I kind of like rugby. I mean, if I want to see minor league baseball, I'll go see the Biloxi Shuckers. this is we go out there double A baseball thing, and that's the Brewers double A team.
Yes, it is.
And so they support. So I don't know. I'd rather. I mean, some people might differ from me.
Maybe get a UFL team.
No, that stadium's not big enough. I mean, maybe it is. No, but I would say more that than baseball because we have our major league team. We have the LSU Tigers, and hopefully Tulane. And you know, we love college baseball. That's like our major league programs. So I hope they can work it out that rugby will eventually.
Maybe
work.
Folks will get their wish. They put an ice hockey rink in there.
Yeah, but that ice would melt so fast. Ain't nobody be skating. They'd be swimming instead of skating. But you know what? Mike and Steve and Charlie, I'm going to stay with on the Olympic route. You know, I went with the Olympic route yesterday with Bruce and Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, you caused a stir with that.
Did I? Why? the world's greatest athlete now is a woman? I mean, how can that be?
Our text line lit up, Cajun Cannon.
Everybody's so sensitive. What's up with that? I'm just speaking the truth. I mean, it's like, a world record holder.
What's today's Olympic story?
Yeah, today's Olympic story, July 31st. On July 31st, 2012, at the Summer Olympics in London, swimmer Michael Phelps won his 19th Olympic medal. Becoming the most decorated Olympian of all time, he finished his career with 28 total Olympic medals, 23 of them gold. You know, if you like competing in the Olympics, I'm just trying to win one damn medal. Or I win one gold medal, I think, man, look, all the hard work I put in, and look what I accomplished. That, to me, blew my mind. Michael Phelps. He likes to smoke a little ganja a little bit, whatever. He's trying to get away, relax, and, you know, he's modern because he's dealing with mental health issues and all that. But a good thing. But just goes to show you how he's a unique athlete. Look, he fit 28 total Olympic medals, 21 of them gold. Like I said, some people say, man, I'm a gold medal winner. How about I won 23 of those damn gold medals.
That's unreal.
Michael Phelps, ain't nobody can hold his jock. I don't think you have a jock when you swim.
No, you don't have to worry about that.
He can't hold his trunks.
Trunks. I mean, that right there, Michael Phelps, somebody the best of the best. It didn't get any better than that in the Olympics.
We grew up, it was Mark Spitz.
Yeah.
And look at what Phelps did after.
No, it's a totally different level. It's like great and greater.
Exactly. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglio along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller. In the 6 o'clock hour, Jeff Nowak will join us, also covering Saints practices. And at 7 o'clock right here on the Big 870, it's exhibition football, but it's football as the Lions play the Chargers. You can hear it right here on the Big 870 WWL. More sports talk right after this news break.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.